Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Consequence Podcast Network. Welcome to State of the Empire, Consequence of Sound's Star Wars speculation podcast, where we look for news in Alderaan places. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hey, I'm Doug.
Hi, I'm Matt.
And this special episode is coming to you out of sequence. I guess we're going to do three State of the Empires 3 weeks in a row because the Solo trailer actually did drop with the Super Bowl. And actually, we were waiting around so long, they're like, hey, how about two trailers back to back, one right after the other? I guess good things come to those who wait.
Yeah, I was expecting just a longer version of the Super Bowl one, but we basically got another trailer.
Yeah.
Like, it was mostly new stuff.
The other trailer happened on Monday morning after the Super Bowl during Good Morning America. They're both on YouTube right now if you haven't seen them. And normally we'd customarily tell you that we're going to keep all the spoilers behind the blast doors. And that's true. If we think we're going to say something to you during this discussion that absolutely, like, you know, damn some shocking moments of the film, we're going to keep them behind the blast doors. But I guess provisionally, there is the blast door for if you haven't seen the trailers, we're going to crack those wide open. So that's how spoilery we are today, as spoilery as these trailers and analyzing what we saw in them. So I guess we should dig right in. I thought they were really good.
Yeah, I completely agree. I feel like we really saw some different looks for the galaxy, you know, some Outer Rim type things, like it's like the Ring of Khafrin from Rogue One, the movie.
Oh, yeah, right. The Ring of Khafrin is that thing we see for just a hot second where Cassian Andor, like, kills that dude and runs away from the troopers.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm all for that.
Exactly. So. Yeah, I mean, this movie looks like it's drenched in it. Now, granted, you know, we had some very high promise with The Last Jedi and Canto Bight on a, you know, on the glitzier end of the spectrum, of course, but in terms of seeing some Star Wars-y, aliens-y stuff. But I gotta say, either they're leading strongly with a bunch of stuff that's barely in the film, or this movie looks, I mean, it looks like as drenched in Star Wars stuff as the prequel era was, but perhaps, hopefully, maybe kind of sort of with a higher integrity of content.
Yeah, it's interesting. Just like Rogue One, it's strange that these, when hearing what the two anthology films, or, you know, whatever they want to call them, Star Wars stories were about, I couldn't have thought that they were further away from each other as far as look, but yet they're both giving me similar feelings. Like, they're bringing me back to that LucasArts Suncoast video era of Star Wars. You know, like, I feel like, you know, that's, there's like a playset in there, you know, that I would be buying at a, you know, a Sam Goody or something. It's, I think it's great. Like that awesome looking dual rail train, which, like, absolutely looks like it should be a level from like a Shadows of the Empire or a Jedi Knight game or something. Like,
or a roller coaster at Star Wars Galaxy's Edge coming 2019.
Oh, maybe.
But it's cool though. It's really fucking cool.
Yeah. And I just, you know, I wonder, so many environments shown off in that trailer. Is it going to be like Rogue One where we see like eight different planets, or are we going to get like multiple biomes and on, you know, from like two or three worlds? Like, I'm not having a lot of things, and not in a bad way, but I'm not having like a lot of things answered by these trailers. Like, I feel like I'm just getting more inquisitive about this movie, which I think is a good thing for a lot of people who doubted the need for this movie to even exist.
Yeah. And hey, that's still a very reasonable doubt. And it could still suck, but at least they went out of their way to make a really good first impression. Though, we haven't heard from Doug yet. Doug, what do you think?
I'm in the camp of, I still don't know why this movie's being made. I mean, like I know the financial reasons why it's being made, but I don't. I mean, the movie, both of the teasers were very pretty. Special effects look great. Donald Glover as Lando, it looks totally awesome and is the most exciting thing for me so far. But just the whole concept has got to go a long way for me to really enjoy it. And I'm not trying to be cynical. I'm not trying to like sit arms folded, like, you know, like, oh, this movie, here's a line in the sand and the movie has to cross it. If my expectations aren't met, it's not even that. It's just like, I just don't, I'm just in general, not interested in a Han Solo story. And if the story is great, then I'll be the first one to be like, holy shit. Like what a great story. I never thought I needed, but I totally love. I'm just not expecting that because I don't know. It's like someone offering me like a plate of my least favorite junk food. And I'm like, thanks, but I don't really want that right now. It's like, no, but this is like fresh off the assembly line. Don't you want? And like, yeah, but I'm just not in the mood. I'm sorry. I'd rather get something else. But that being said, I feel like the trailer also was just dazzling us with images and we didn't get any story. I mean, it's just a teaser, so of course it's to be expected. It's just it follows suit of every other teaser trailer that we saw at the Super Bowl. They all start to look the same to me after a while, and I'm remaining optimistic because it's Star Wars, and I mean Star Wars is a pillar of cinema, so I'm always going to hold out hope for a Star Wars movie. But I'm just left kind of normal after it. It didn't really wow me, but it didn't look bad either. So I'm like relieved in a way, but at the same time, I'm just not excited. So I'm as neutral can be.
There's some stuff I didn't expect from it. Like we'd seen some content in both behind the scenes and stuff that had been leaked that suggested there was going to be a darker aesthetic to parts of it. But I was surprised by how dark it was. And like when there's what I'm led to believe is an Imperial recruitment office of some kind, it looks like the police station from Blade Runner. Right. It's Corellia looks super dark, but then also we're seeing what I presume to be another planet, though it doesn't have to be, of like this, the dark mountainous region where the roller coaster train is, and also a place with some beaches and so on. So that's decidedly different. But mostly, it's a pretty darkly hued movie. And I remember that when the film was first being talked about, they were discussing Westerns, and they were actually discussing the aesthetics of a certain Western painter, whose name I can't recall right now, which is actually present in the Solo preview images, the images that are being used on the merchandise, like the action figures, which have leaked recently and so on, which is an orange and yellow sort of sunburst looking thing. That is absolutely not reflected in the rest of this. But yeah, so I'm curious, when Lord Miller left, did that aesthetic, that cowboy Western aesthetic, depart completely, or is it a part of the film we're not seeing yet?
You know, I completely forgotten about that Western aspect, Cap, until you brought it up just now. And it's funny because one of the things I remarked about this trailer after seeing it initially is that I was expecting a sort of like, especially with the title treatment, like a sort of like 70s sci-fi retro thing about the movie. And I was very surprised that it evoked more like mid 80s cybery Blade Runner future.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there were moments, of course, like the quick draw pose of Solo getting in that blaster fight with, you know, whomever dude and his homeboys on the beach. But maybe one of the reasons that I'm so thrilled is not just the fact that it does seem full of stuff that just looks like, I mean, I saw many other people commenting this on the Star Wars Spoilers Facebook group. You know, it looks like the expanded universe. This whole film, everything we're seeing right here looks like the expanded universe, which is an exciting prospect always. But it definitely defied my expectations for what visually it was going to look like.
One of my favorite comments I saw on Reddit was Solo 2049.
And you know, I'm a sucker for that shit, so that's fine. If Corellia is Los Angeles in the Blade Runner universe, all right, that's fine.
It's interesting that the Rogue One trailer, you know, we were able to break up into like, oh yeah, okay, so we have our very like our three definable planets that we kind of knew about, you know, and like, you know, Edu and Scarif and Jeddah. In this movie, like, I really like, I don't know how many we're looking at. I don't know what time periods, as we kind of conjecturing that this movie takes place over a number of years.
Yeah,
possibly.
We've basically been told that by a number of sources, and it's reflected in the trailer itself, actually, especially with the character Kira, or Kira, I suppose, she's not like separated like She-Ra, Kira. That's Emilia Clarke's character. We see her in the speeder race with Han and she's just looking like, you know, like much like him, like some person from Corellia, seems like, you know, caught up in the action, having a good time. And then we also see her striding out of the fancy ass, you know, untainted Millennium Falcon, looking like, wearing a cape, looking like a million bucks, probably rolling with Lando's crew because she's with his droid from this film. That's not the same person, you know, that's the same person but older. So there's clearly a severe expanse of time. And when she says to him in the film, you know, like, no one knows you like I do, or whatever the line is, I think, you know, we're going to see quite a lot of time jumps in terms of maybe I'd say probably three like time periods. We're going to see Han in his youth, and we're going to see him get, you know, recruit for the Imperials. But then we also have the monologue in the second trailer where he talks about how he was kicked out. So are we going to see him get kicked out, or are we going to have that, you know, glossed over? But we're going to see these decidedly different periods: the street racing period, the disbarred military scoundrel looking to find his way, and then, you know, whatever moment, however much of it we get, of like a closer to crystallized Han Solo by the end of the film.
Right, and I would say, out of all the things about this movie that, like, you know, I know that the general consensus is much more worry about this film than any of the others, especially with the production troubles that have kind of like even eclipsed Rogue One's. I would say that concerns me the most is, tell me a story. Don't tell me his story.
Right.
You know, like, I want an amazing Han Solo adventure from his earlier days, but I don't need it to be the defining catch me up to a New Hope movie.
What's like, funny is that, like, that's actually doing a catch-all film is actually the thing in their least best interest.
Right. Don't you want to franchise Aaron Reich if he ends up being really good? You know, like, I don't know. It's going to get confusing later. I hope they leave a gap. You know, like, I hope we get to a point where it's not, you know, Lando and Han, like, seeing each other for the last time before they run into each other at Bespin. You know, I want it to be like, give me like a 5-year period where you can continue to make, like, if this movie is very successful, more great Aaron Reich Solo films. Like, I would love that.
Like, they show Solo flying the Falcon and Lando is like behind him, and it's supposed to be Lando's ship. And I'm like, is he going to win the ship already? You know, it'd be interesting to me if they end the movie where he doesn't own the ship and he's just like, damn it, I got to fly it that one time, but Lando, I want that ship. And he's like, sorry, buddy, you can't have it. And then, you know, you keep thinking there's going to be a game where he's going to win it, but it saves it for another film. Like, what better way to open up another film?
And I gotta say, for like, you know, in acceptable fan service type things, it would be fun if, you know, Han is making jokes about, you know, like, wanting the ship and, you know, like, loving the ship. And you know, but, you know, Lando's like, it's mine, you know, that sort of thing. And I'd like to see what the circumstance is that Lando's in the back and Han's flying it. Like, does he know Han's, you know, a better pilot, so he lets him like take the controls? Is that a big moment for Han? Like, I think that intrigued me a lot in the trailer, is seeing Lando behind him.
Would a better pilot have to run into a TIE fighter like physically in order to get rid of it? That's the thing, though. Like, I never bought the fact that Han Solo is quote unquote the best pilot in the galaxy, or that the Millennium Falcon is quote unquote the fastest ship in the entire galaxy. I think he's good, but I think he's a braggart. So I do fear that the movie's going to try to make him like a golden child that is like, you can't, like, he's a hero already, but he's not a hero in New Hope. Like, I don't know. That's where my apprehensions come in.
Right. And you know, there's ways to handle that well. I mean, that could be Han bragging, you know, I want to be the best pilot in the galaxy, but nobody, you know, respects him for it, or nobody's heard of him. Like, you know, he gets upset when nobody's heard of the Millennium Falcon. There are ways to make this movie really good. I hope they can use a couple of them.
At the risk of sounding crude, I am interested in cockpit pornography of like all the flippings of the switches and like right. All of the buttons and like the levers moving. And I feel like,
well, you're in luck, fancy boy. There's so much of it.
No, I feel like if they can really put you, if you can show the brand new, squeaky clean, fresh off the factory Millennium Falcon through the eyes of this dirty Han Solo, who's just like, this is the greatest like sexiest ship I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And you understand why he wants it so bad. I'm all about that. And then just like making it look as cool as possible. And then you're like, okay, I see why he wants it. It does look really awesome. And then when he gets it, you know, it's going to turn into a piece of shit. Like, I mean, maybe he can upkeep it. Maybe he understands the engines. But if there's one thing we know from just looking at these two different characters of Lando and Han Solo, one has style, the other does not. So,
right. They both have a little swagger. But yeah, definitely Lando is definitely killing him in the style.
So let's talk about some of the stuff we did see here. Lando's sidekick character is not Lobot, but L337, which is this motion capture droid. L337, by the way, like looking suspiciously like Leet in Leet speak, hacker talk. Which is cute, I guess, but also a bit weirdly real world, though I suppose if George Lucas knew Leet speak, he might also make that same joke, so who am I to talk? Interestingly, the droid is played by Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who is a British actor best known for a recently successful BBC television series based on a one-woman play that she did. So a very interesting casting choice for this mocap robot, and the seldom seen in Star Wars film female type droid. You know, we got EV-99 and very few others with significant screen time. And then we see more of the crew that Woody Harrelson's character Beckett. By the way, Beckett, who's thus so far unnamed, though he may get named later in the week, because all this week, Entertainment Weekly is publishing assorted think pieces based on information disseminated, you know, cleared by Lucasfilm for spreading, including more info on all these supporting characters. So by the time you hear this, that content might be out already, worth checking out. We'll certainly be checking it out and probably posting our thoughts on it in the Star Wars Spoilers group on Facebook. But other crew members of Beckett's crew is Thandi Newton. She plays, well, we don't know yet, but she's got this tough lady scoundrel vibe.
If she played Sana Solo, I'd be very interested.
The rumor is she's playing someone named Val. That was from a report a long time ago, but I have not heard that name since. I've seen it brought up today, but like in between then and now, we've just heard Val from a source that named other accurate names.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, like the more I see of Kira, the more I think, yeah, it seems like parts of her character could have been Sana Solo, and there's was so much room for that comic book character to have maybe they could be like, okay, so how far are we going to take this, you know, interconnected universe thing? Can we actually create a character in the comics and cast that character in a film and have that be an experience? Is that why they yanked her all over, you know, in the comics and didn't do anything with her? That seems like a very real possibility.
We can go back to that time when there were like four or five rumored black actors, female actors, lined up for the lead female role in this movie, but then none of them got casted. So it makes me wonder if she was at one point Sana Staros, and we'll be interested to see where they take the character to see if that was something that could have been a possibility.
Yeah. It's a really interesting question, and it's certainly something that probably would have happened, you know, like who knows what happened to the character once Ron Howard took over the film, and that may have added this other degree of separation between those two figures. There's also an alien that when I first saw it in the trailer, I was like, oh shit, is that Maz Kanata? But no, it's actually a different species altogether. Similar though. Four-armed alien dude manning a gun, I think. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it looks like he might be in one of the turrets.
We also get Han's dice are in his speeder, which is an interesting, I guess, you know, help us make those stupid moments in The Last Jedi have a little bit more connective tissue, since the dice, I did find it so strange that they lingered on the dice in The Last Jedi, made them such a weird token item when they were only ever a background thing of the lowest caliber in the original films.
Right.
So maybe now that as a collective body of work, it'll all get a little more validated.
Do we think Kira's going to blow on those dice before the big race?
You know what, Doug?
Yeah.
Let's say yeah.
He's like, here's my lucky charm. Why don't you give him a blow before we go? And she's like, no, thanks. He just hangs him on the rearview mirror. It's like, all right, let's see how lucky they are.
There's a new TIE fighter, which is weird. A new TIE fighter to go along with the new Stormtrooper armors that we talked about in a couple episodes ago. Because they always got to do it. You know, it prints money and it's kind of getting old at this point, making new design renditions on shit we are familiar with. And I mean, it's
the checklist, Cap. It's new TIE fighter, new Stormtrooper.
But how many variations does this unfeeling Nazi empire that does not really allow for free expression, how many different versions of Stormtroopers do they make?
The trooper thing amuses me because it's like they're prepared for everything. It makes me wonder if Star Destroyers have like a compliment. Like, do they just have different armor for different situations? Or do like we carry a squadron of like swamp troopers and a squadron of tank troopers and a squadron of, you know, like they all have their own thing that's just hang out. Actually, I now kind of want to watch like a TV show about, you know, like, you know, the different stormtrooper types trying to like interact with each other on a base.
I have a headcanon that's still kind of formulating that basically all the stormtroopers we've ever really seen, for the most part, have been stationed on Star Destroyers and the Death Star. And when you're stationed in space, white is probably just the best option because you're in a sterile environment. It's very clean. Sure. And if you get blasted out into space, you're easy to spot. Whereas if you land on any other planet like Scarif or something, I'm sure whatever permanent military base that's there has the right equipment that you would need to transition into. And if it was just a simple color change, I'm sure they could do that somehow. So I don't know. I would be interested to see a show or something where they kind of just explain it just a little bit, just to show like, oh yeah, no, how come they don't have like the sand colored stuff for the sand troopers on Tatooine? Mm-hmm. Well, it's a backwater shithole planet, so I don't think anyone cares.
Yeah, in the First Order anyway, the execution troopers, that's a special armor that you are chosen to wear. It could happen any day, according to the visual dictionary. Like any day you could be like, hey, you're going to be an execution trooper today. And they'd be like, all right. And they put on their execution armor, which like much like an executioner's hood, shields their identity somehow. I guess it doesn't have the same kind of signature code or
doesn't
whatever.
Have the barcode on it or whatever.
Yeah. Does that work the same way as everything else? I don't know.
But wouldn't people in your platoon notice you're not there?
They totally would. They totally would.
They're like, hey, where's FN-2187? It's just like, oh, I don't know. Man, he must be on execution duty for like the past, you know, 5 days or something.
That pussy, he's going to cry. Bet you he cries tonight.
Like, nah.
I'll bet you 2 credits he cries tonight.
No, I bet that's totally what happened. Like, to punish him for not killing anyone at the last battle, Phasma totally put him on execution duty for like the next week. He didn't. It's like, there's rumors that he like betrayed us. Nah, ain't no way. He'd never do that. He's not that chicken.
I think I like this. I like this show. I mean, we've already kind of had it before with Troops many, many years ago, but it's definitely due for. I think we should revisit Troops. I think that should happen. Other major features of this trailer, we have the tentacles, which is presumably part of the Kessel Run, the same giant cloud that the Star Destroyer emerges from intensely. Oh, man, what a great shot. The tentacles are weird, though, because obviously the first thing when you see them, you're like, those are tentacles. But also, there's a lot of debris in those fast shots that we're getting there. It almost made me wonder, like, is that just a tentacle-like rock formation and those are some kind of stalactite, stalagmite things? Like, that's maybe not what it seems to be.
Bresnikan referred to it as a Lovecraftian monster.
Yeah, that's Anthony Bresnikan at EW.
And, like, I feel like he's working from official information.
Yeah, one would suspect. It's hard to tell with him because he always writes it like, oh, I'm just with you guys, except for when I drop important information or even weird incidental information. Like, that shot with two figures walking out towards the ocean is Han Solo and Kira. You'd have no reason to know that, but for some reason Anthony Bresnikan does.
Right, and like, he'll drop, like he actually dropped old Expanded Universe knowledge about the Kessel Run and the Maw, the cluster of black holes from, like, I mean, it was used a lot, but the Jedi Academy trilogy and stuff. So, I mean, like, you know, he's dropping some, like, fan-like knowledge, like, deep cuts, but...
Yeah, and then he's like, but is that the case with this film? We'll find out. And I'm like, what do you or don't you know? This is so weird. And then one final interesting thing, like, you know, we see Woody Harrelson's character Beckett saying, like, all right, let's get together a team. So in terms of the sequence of the event, he's there getting together a team. Han is already with Chewbacca. So the Spice Mines of Kessel thing has already happened in theory, unless they've changed the origin story of how Han and Chewie get together, which is possible, because as far as I don't think there's ever any line that really says how Han and Chewie hooked up in the original trilogy. So the whole thing could change.
Yeah, there's nothing.
We've seen Wookiees being used for mining operations, I think specifically on Kessel, even in Rebels.
Yep.
And so we know that's a confirmed thing that's happening in the universe, but are we going to get it here? I'm not sure. So then if Beckett is assembling the team, acting as though maybe Han isn't in... One would suspect from that scene and the way the inflection is, Han isn't his, like, surrogate child, you know, in smuggling yet. But Han and Chewie are already together by that point. And then we see what looks like an operation. We see Beckett being attacked on that snowy planet by the guy who is on the beach with what I assume is a vibroblade staff of some kind with a Kylo Ren-looking mask. So he's being attacked on the train in the mountains. He himself is probably on the beach planet. So beach planet, then onto the planet with the dark clouds and the snowy mountains where the train is, where we also see Han in another vehicle that's not the Falcon. And there's one shot where that vehicle is dropping off a payload that's hooked to wires, and there's a fleet of people on speeders that are catching it. And then that same vehicle is shown fleeing a massive explosion that's going into the upper atmosphere.
Oof, there's a lot going on.
Right. And so we know Kessel's in the film, but we haven't seen Kessel in the trailers yet. So, and all that stuff, is it third act? Is it middle act? Boy, we don't know anything still, which is great,
and
actually.
And at this point, I'm trying to put together, it's such a weird production marketing cycle. I mean, for a movie, period, you know, especially a big blockbuster that comes out Memorial Day, because that's such a desirable weekend. You would think we would have had something like, I mean, practically last summer. But I don't know. I'm trying to compare it to, I know Last Jedi, like the major beats weren't known until literally the week before, but I think we kind of knew when, like we knew Krayt was last, we knew, you know, the Battle of Dakar started the movie, you know, we obviously knew where Rey was going to be, but this movie, like, I don't know where the young stuff takes place, where the old stuff, like how much it moves. Like Pablo Hidalgo has been very mum on the timing. Like I think he said, he's like, some time has certainly passed between episode 3 and this movie. I have no idea. That might be part of why I'm so excited by these trailers, is I'm
tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Very engaged in trying to figure all of that out. And I don't know where to begin to do so.
Right. Well, where we can look to is the other stuff we have that's leaked so far. We have a few action figure photos, and we'll link to where you can see them on this episode's page. We post them up on Star Wars Spoilers. There's a rack of figures. I think they're Star Wars Black Series figures, where we see the general assembly of folks, Kira, Solo, Lando, Chewbacca, and then also the what we're going to call the Nemesis figure, which is the dude with the Kylo-like visor and the helmet with the Arbesh all over it. And there was a dude on Reddit who actually preempted the existence of this character, seemingly, like, you know, mentioned someone who was aesthetically correct to this character being what he called the main villain of the movie. Which is interesting.
Right.
Because, I mean, we have, there's good reason to actually think that, because we have this character, he and Han, or them and Han, on a shootout on the beach planet, and then also attacking Beckett on the train on the other planet, which I suppose could be the same planet if we're doing planets with multiple biomes, but so far haven't seen that yet. So that's interesting, because the dude looks like a tribal wastelander adversary, you know, just dude, not a planet hopping bounty hunter kind of character.
Yeah, and that same Redditor referred to him as an Imperial.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Which, yeah, he said he is an Imperial despite not looking like one, which bothers me, because this is the opportunity to make scum and villainy the showcase of this film. I didn't even necessarily, other than, like, you know, it doesn't surprise me that this movie is going to feature Star Destroyers and TIE Fighters chasing the Falcon. But, like, you know, there's a difference between just making the Imperials the fuzz and making them the villains of this movie. You know, like, I'm totally okay with the Imperials being the legal authority, like, as they are at this point in the galaxy. But I don't know if I want them to be the bad guys of the movie. Like, I hope they're not, like, you know, foiling some Imperial plot on some planet. You know, like, I want them to be in it for, like, the riches.
Yeah, for the money.
Yeah, the fortune and glory.
Right. Is this or isn't it a heist film? You know, there's wealth in the galaxy. Why are we, you know, are they stealing equipment from the Imperials? If so, well, sure, that makes sense for them to do. I mean, logical plot, yeah, but also fair. Kind of a shame, because they could be stealing from the Black Sun or whatever.
Right. The Empire doesn't always have to be the bad guys, and that's how you keep the universe fresh. You gotta keep the forces of darkness and light coming from many different sectors in order to keep everything fresh and interesting, especially when Han is not necessarily, like, in the fight yet, you know? Mm-hmm. But
yeah, he,
you know,
what he says in New Hope, I'm not in this for your revolution, and I'm not in it for you. I'm in it for money.
Right.
Expect to be well paid.
And none of this is confirmed, but the guy did, you know, predate that character being in it, and the, you know, the nemesis, you know, of the film, like, 2 days before we saw these trailers, and he was seemed right on everything else, and now we have, you know, that outlier of a mention of him being an Imperial, which bothers me.
But maybe we don't, you know, there's plenty of ways that we could just be seeing this information at face value, and it's actually something much more interesting. And there's also plenty of opportunities that the shots that we were shown in the trailer were simply for the brand recognition for, you know, everybody else out there who, right, isn't necessarily going to connect with generic weird spaceship we've never seen before. They need to see a Star Destroyer. Totally understandable.
Right. And of course, you know, this, you know, maybe this is just another, once again, misunderstanding. I mean, how, you know, a couple weeks ago, we had heard Han in Imperial disguise, and we all kind of groaned at that. And now we know it's not that. It's Han is an Imperial at some point.
Which is great, because that's a part of his backstory that we hoped that they hadn't gotten rid of. And right, here it is, large and in charge. In fact, yep, we even have some close-ups of the Lego minifigs to back that up, of Han in an Imperial outfit of some kind. We also have one other action figure that's worth mentioning, which is a two-pack of Lando and also a Kessel Guard, who doesn't look not unlike the Nemesis character, similar kind of wastelander sort of dress. And it also, you know, definitively says, you know, hey, we know Kessel's in the film. We've seen things heavily hinting that, but it is. But, and also, we've packaged Lando with that. So Lando's story is going to have something to do with Kessel, and presumably something to do with the acquisition of Chewbacca into their motley crew. But have we seen Kessel in the trailers? I could not say. We have, however, seen a really, really cool lounge singer and in lounge. And I want to know more about that. You know, the musical sequences in Return of the Jedi, either version, they're fun and campy. The special edition one, too campy. But this lounge singer with a Vox thing attached to her face, and then, like, seemingly a co-singer, a backing vocalist that's like a head in a jar, I'm on board. That's weird as hell. Let's do it. As far as tie-in material, boy. Yeah. This movie, and no matter how polished it looks from the trailers, they're still scrambling. They're scrambling super bad because there is no real tie-in material coming out. We got the action figures debuting in April, and with books, well, you get The Art of Solo, you get Solo, the Visual Dictionary, and then you get a book for tweens of a first-person account of one of the main characters. You get the Ultimate Sticker Collection. I know we're all excited about that. Coloring book. Ooh, an activity book. And then Marvel is repackaging issues 11 through 12 of Star Wars and also the Marjorie Liu Han Solo miniseries comic book into a bound volume altogether, and that's it. That's Solo in books.
And that's a good repackaging if you haven't read either of them.
Yep.
But like, I think it's just time for all the fans of the literature aspect of Star Wars, whether that's comics or books or both, to just know that these movies are just, you know, they're being edited and refined so close up to their release that there's no way we're going to get meaty, meaty tie-in material anymore.
Yeah, like we just got the DJ comic book for The Last Jedi. Matt, what'd you think? We haven't talked about it.
Actually, I have not had the chance to read it.
Ah, you bastard. I really liked it. It was entertaining. It was the scum and villainy that I hoped to see in Canto Bite. DJ is an interesting character. I mean, I thought between the DJ comic and the Storms of Crait comic, the DJ one is far better. So
That's great.
If you want to throw down $5 for a single issue of a comic book, it's admittedly double sized, then get the DJ comic. But hey, you folks ready for Willow Watch?
Am I?
Willow.
So there's not an abundance to report about Willow right now, except that, you know, here we are in 2018, the 30th anniversary year of Willow, which almost happens like in a hair's breadth of Solo coming out. Well, Ron Howard recently tweeted, catching up with my pal Warwick Davis. We're doing some post-production sound work for Solo, A Star Wars Story. We'll link to the photo accompanying that. So that's fun and cool, and we can be sure as shit to see so much Willow discussion pouring out of the Ron Howard camp as the promotion for this film ramps up, as we've been saying all along. But being that it's the 30th anniversary year, there are a number of events that we've also been mentioning that have come into our radar. Willow screenings are popping up everywhere this year. And while we do hope to still be throwing a Willow anniversary bash of our own, and those discussions are still ongoing and we're still not able to say anything about it, there is a Willow screening happening very soon here in Nerdy Show's home turf of Orlando, Florida. So if you want to come hang out with Doug and I on the lawn for a free screening of Willow, it's going to be on April 5th at 8 p.m. in Winter Park. We'll have links to where you can find out more info about that screening on this episode's page. And if you're going to be there, hop on the Star Wars Spoilers Facebook group. Let us know. We'll have a meetup.
All that considered, do you think we got to move this up from goat level to ostrich level?
Whoa. I mean, I don't want to be reactionary. It is the anniversary. But Doug, I don't want to be reactionary here. I think that we need to save ostrich level for when something crazy comes out of Ron's mouth. And considering the last thing he said publicly about Willow was, I'd love to do a TV series. We got to hold on to that.
Yeah, but he also tweeted that photo of him and Warwick hanging out, watching like the first cut of Solo.
Well, he didn't follow it up with, lol, JK, we're talking about Willow too. Winky face.
But he did say, oh, it's great catching up with old friends. Like, it's like, oh boy, something's cooking. You wouldn't just tweet that photo without knowing full well. You know what I'm saying? Like,
true. He did also recently post a picture of him and George Lucas in the snow during the filming of Willow.
There you go. Dude, he has Willow on the brain. I think this proves it.
He misses it. And he realized how much fun he had working for Lucasfilm. Solo's going to be a huge success. And he's going to say, guys, let's do Willow 2, and we'll be there for it. And we'll remind him that we were at the forefront of this movement.
Yeah, hashtag Willow Watch. If you're talking to Ron Howard.
What if they just, because like in true Lucasfilm fashion, what if for the anniversary they re-release Willow, but like how they did for Indiana Jones, instead of it just being like, you know, Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, this is going to be Willow, A Star Wars Story.
I hope not. I mean, but that would confirm the old April Fool's gag. So
yeah, that is my favorite April Fool's joke of all time. Is StarWars.com declaring it Star Wars canon and adding it to their databank.
But we'll see. I you know, Doug, you're really the master of the Willow Watch alert system. So I trust your judgment if you think we're ready for Ostrich.
I mean, but those tweets weren't definitive, but man, it's like he's got Willow on the brain. I'd say if he tweeted anything, if he actually used the words Willow in any of those tweets, maybe you'd have to bump it up to Ostrich. But I think we're on the cusp of Ostrich right now.
I'll agree to that. We're cusping Ostrich, folks. Thus ends Willow Watch. So State of the Empire is obviously a production of the Consequence Podcast Network, but we also exist purely by, a certain degree of your good graces, because we are co-produced by the Nerdy Show Network, and all Nerdy Show Network programming is listener-supported. We're recording, Doug and Matt are remote, as this is a kind of last-minute recording due to the solo trailers, but normally we record in the Nerdy Show studios, and our production is entirely funded by listener support. So if you would like to support this program, please do consider joining in on the Nerdy Show Network Patreon at patreon.com/nerdyshow. And we have all kinds of bonus content there, I should add, like tons and tons of outtakes from State of the Empire over the years. But if you would, if you don't have money to throw our way, that's okay. We understand. But do please consider rating and reviewing us on iTunes, or also possibly rating and reviewing us on Podchaser. iTunes is still the number one source for people acquiring podcasts in this world, but so you should definitely do that if you can, if it's not too much of a nuisance, and we know it's kind of a nuisance. But Podchaser is a burgeoning platform for podcast discovery. It's a really exciting new resource for people discovering podcasts. You could type in, let's say, Wilro Hood or Han Solo star Alden Ehrenreich, and you could find any podcast where those topics have come up. It actually lets you search podcasting in the same intuitive, googly kind of way you'd want to, really. And on there, you can not only rate and review series, but you can also rate and review individual episodes. And we got to give a big shout out to Hoodoo Voodoo, who rated and reviewed every single episode of State of the Empire on Podchaser. Now, it wasn't individualized. This is the same review over and over and over again, but that still helps us, and it's still good advice. They said, "My only go-to Star Wars podcast series. Join the hosts of the show as they follow up-to-date Star Wars details, anything from films to merchandise, hear their speculations and reactions to content, and for spoiler-sensitive content, check behind the blast doors. You may get a terrible Star Wars joke out of it as well. Of note are two segments related to properties intricately tied into Star Wars as a franchise, Willow Watch, and Indie Inquiry." Thank you so much, Hoodoo Voodoo. That was a massive, massive power play on your part, and I know you did it on other Nerdy Show series as well. That has not gone unnoticed. Thank you so much. I also want to give a shout out to two new programs on the Consequence Podcast Network. We have, of course, our main website is Consequence of Sound. Well, we have the titular Consequence of Sound podcast, which is an album review show. It's coming out three times a week, and they're really bite-sized episodes averaging over like 5 minutes, a multitude of genres. And then maybe more relevant to State of the Empire listeners, we have a new show called TV Party, where it's a weekly catch-up on all the latest shit happening in television. And then every other week, a more specific conversation takes place. But if you're an avid TV watcher, it's a great crew of people to watch TV along with. Coming up next episode of State of the Empire, we're going to be talking about TV ourselves. We're going to be talking about Star Wars Rebels, catching everybody up to this mid-season break that's about to, they're about to come back from and conclude the series. So we're going to be discussing that. And then in our next news segment, we've got a couple things tucked away, including some interesting tidbits about Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, the theme park. A little bit about Blast Doors stuff, just a teeny smidgen of a Blast Doors thing we're going to go into. But first, before we leave, for the spoilers, folks, Doug, you did a cool thing on Twitter.
Yeah, it was really an impromptu thing. I was just reading over this fourth draft script of A New Hope, and I was noticing little differences. And I realized that, you know, like every page I'm sort of seeing something I wanted to talk about or just say, hey, isn't that funny? And instead of just bombarding you both with texts all day, like, you know, and your phone vibrating at work and stuff all the time, I figured I would just do it as a live tweet on Twitter because I still am discovering what Twitter's for. I don't even really know for sure, but if this is a place to post it all in one go and then have everyone look at it later, then great. So I read through the whole thing and made little observations on differences or things that were maybe foreshadowing and just, I don't know, anything that sort of caught my eye. And it was a lot of fun and it was some cool stuff that I never realized before. Like Ponda Baba, when he shoves Luke, according to the script, he's just drunk. He's not really looking for a fight. He's just, and whatever, take it. And then all of a sudden, Dr. Evazan comes by and is like, he doesn't like you. And much like that Robot Chicken sketch, he could be totally making it up and just wants to fight. Ponda Baba could have just been, hey, man, you stepped on my foot. Like, we don't know. So he may have had his arm cut off for no good reason, unfortunately. But that's just one of, like, many, many fun things that I found. And if you're at all interested, yeah, go check it out. Let me know, because I'd like to do more of those, especially page. For other Star Wars movies.
And it's also a very valid point. You know, we don't talk about our Twitter handles. That's usually a thing people do on podcasts. But, you know, we don't really do it. But you can find me at Cap Blackard.
I'm at Doug V. Banks. First name, middle initial, last name, Doug V. Banks.
Well, what's your middle name, Doug?
That's a secret.
It's not Vader, is it?
Oh, my God.
Matt, you have a Twitter, right?
I do have a Twitter, but it's currently as desolate as the Dune Sea, even though I told myself in the new year I wasn't going to let that be the case. But it's at Matthew Spill.
And either way, you can, you know, whether you're on Twitter or not, if you are on Facebook, that's where an awful lot of action is happening with ourselves and the rest of anybody else brave enough to enjoy the succulent and refined taste of Star Wars spoilers. Just search State of the Empire or Star Wars spoilers. You should have no trouble finding it. But right now, we're going to open those blast doors. We'll see the rest of you later.
Open the blast doors! Open the blast doors!
A weird thing happened on Reddit. Someone posted a Boba Fett minifig that looks just like all the other Boba Fett minifigs, except it's a little lighter, a little bit more pastel. And rumors going around, Boba Fett's in this movie.
I hope not.
It makes sense. I hope not too, but like, how can they resist? I mean, really, how can they? It's like a shared universe movie where they don't even have to make a Boba Fett film.
I tell you, the one way having Boba Fett in it that I'd actually kind of enjoy seeing instead of just like another Ponda Baba Evazan cameo of just like the bumpy, you know, like, oh, sorry, Boba Fett, didn't mean to bump into you. It's like, you just watch yourself, Solo. One day you're going to get yours. Like, if it's instead like an actual scene where they're like, oh, man, we have to hide or we have to escape or we, you know, like because Han doesn't have the Millennium Falcon. He's like, I got to charter something out for this damn rock because the Imperial, you know, army's after me. There's only one person I can turn to and it's fucking Boba Fett. And you, like they have to work together somehow. Like doing the opposite of what you're expecting would be so awesome. It's like, oh, yeah, they actually, you know, they weren't like best buddies or nothing, but they actually worked together a couple times like just to make it that much more interesting.
That would be rad. I mean, or Han Solo could be like, man, why do you wear that helmet? Bet your face looks like a sandy asshole.
I hope that's exactly the line.
Then he pops it off and it's Robot Chicken. It says, oh, it's even more gorgeous underneath. Hello.
The Boba Fett thing was also mentioned by that same Redditor who described the Nemesis character before the trailer happened and before the action figure leaked. So I'd say we're putting this at highly likely.
If you're going to do Boba, just give me Jabba. That's all I want. I just need Jabba.
Jabba. Come on. Great character.
Like, pick a bounty hunter from the lineup in Empire Strikes Back. Like, I don't know if it needs to be Boba, but like,
give me some of that sweet Zuckus.
I would love some Zuckus.
We're getting Zuckus and Forlom in the free comic book day issue of Star Wars Adventures.
That's cool.
So maybe that's a hint to more Zuckus.
All for that.
The other thing, ages ago, there was a cancellation of the dude who plays Darth Vader now, that does the acting for the body, and canceled an event, and his representation said, unfortunately, he has to cancel this event. He's scheduled to appear in a brand new Star Wars production. The only thing filming at that time was Solo. And either they need another person of that height and skill for this film, which is possible, or Darth Vader's in this movie, which is just fucking terrible. So just wanted to remind everybody that that's still out there in the ether. That's still a possibility if we're looking at Boba Fett. Vader's still also a possibility for this movie.
Does maybe the physique that we're looking for with that guy fits the Nemesis person?
Jeez, maybe. But that's a heck of a role. That would have meant that the Nemesis character in its entirety was maybe a last-minute addition, which I would hope not. But who can say?
We still know so little about Kira. I just hope that she's not Irene Adler.
What does that mean? Who is that?
That's the Sherlock Holmes' main squeeze. And well, really, she was only in one book, but in every other movie adaptation or TV show, she has to pop up like a million times and is like the femme fatale who you don't know what side she's on. And she betrays him this time, but she saves him this time. And I just, you know, I just want something cool and not like, I just want a Han Solo movie that feels, I don't have the choice. I'm getting a Han Solo movie and I just want it to feel fun and somewhat fresh and interesting, maybe take a little bit of a risk. I don't want this to say, you know, it was kind of like Guardians of the Galaxy, but it was also kind of like this. And that character was kind of like this. I just, you know, something new. And maybe that's too tall of an order for Disney at this point in time, but I don't want to think so. I think there's still a lot of magic left.
And I don't think that character trope you mentioned would be out of place in a story like this.
You know, she earned a character poster that they released this week. You know, they did character posters for Han, Chewie, Lando, and her. So it's interesting, you know, they're clearly positing her as like, you know, team member number four. You know, obviously she's the biggest face of the, you know, I guess besides Woody Harrelson, but you know, we kind of knew Harrelson was taking a mentor role. So she's the biggest risk. You know, she doesn't have that establishment that the other three have. So it'll be interesting to see like how they choose to utilize her. I'd say I'm not the biggest fan of hers from Game of Thrones, but I have to say I love the look and like the posture and everything. I actually think her character poster is the best out of them.
So far, it just seems really familiar. We haven't heard her say a single word. She just I don't want her reduced to just the mysterious love interest and not have any personality beyond that.
But Doug, you know, we have heard her say words. She told Han that she knew him so well.
You didn't even see her say it. You know what I'm saying? It's like there's so much about, I mean, granted, this is the early teaser. We haven't seen much of anything yet, but I just, and like the fact that she's changing like the outfits over the course of all these different years, like she's weaving in and out of Han's life. And I don't know, like I want it to be awesome, but I just don't see much there yet.
You know, It's interesting because that weaving in and out of his life thing is heavily reminding me of, so outside the Han Solo adventures, which were the books that came out in the 80s after the movies were like recently finished after Jedi was done, there was another Han Solo trilogy in the 90s, you know, the Han Solo trilogy that was more of a origin type story. But I mean, it wasn't like, you know, meeting Chewie and things like that, but it was early adventures, and the three books took place over three different time periods, and they all kind of weaved in and out. He kind of had a love interest that, you know, he adored, but like she was such a like she was a spice addict, and I think actually he met her at like a, I mean, it's been a long time since I've read them, but at like a spice outpost of some sort. And, you know, they fell in love, they did their thing, but she kept leaving him because, like, she wanted to, like, rid the world of the Empire. And he wanted nothing to do with it. Like, he wouldn't help her out, he wouldn't whatever. She ended up joining the rebellion at one point, and they lost touch. And, like, she at one point had asked him, or, you know, connected with him before she was going on this one mission that she knew was going to be, like, a suicide mission. And it turned out it was stealing the Death Star plans. And, you know, he kind of just like wrote her off, and then like kind of got word like a day or two before he stepped into the Mos Eisley cantina that she had died. And, you know, he was basically like, mentally, he was like, to hell with the rebels. I'm done with this. Like, I'm just going to do my own thing. Basically becomes like more of the cold hearted person you initially meet in A New Hope. And then, you know, he walks into the cantina and the book ends there, not realizing that his life was going to take a huge twist in that direction. I actually like the way the book did it.
That sounds great. We'll link to that on this episode's page.
And I enjoyed those books a lot. Like, I actually remember as a teenager reading them, thinking, like, I used to daydream, oh, I want to direct these as films. Like, I wanted to adapt them. And what's funny is I, over the years, I've come to find that those aren't as, like, fond for everybody else. Like, for some reason, those three books weren't, like, necessarily, like, universally loved. I don't think they were despised, but, like, I loved those books. And I loved the relationship that they painted for Han and Bria. That was the name of her character, Bria Theron. You know, it made so much sense for Han's character in A New Hope, especially meeting Leia, and like what Leia's a totally different person, but at the same time still as like motivated by, you know, her cause. And it just played really well over the course of the saga. And seeing Kira in these trailers with different looks and things like that, like it's heavily reminding me of that. And I'm wondering if like they're going to do that. I'm wondering if her doom is sealed, you know, like in this, like, is she going to die because she believes in causes, and that's going to make him basically like screw causes. I hate them.
Yeah. Like, I feel like either she's going to betray him or she's going to die. Or she's going to betray him and then she's going to die redeeming herself. Like, I don't know. I just kind of, as much as I like Casino Royale, I don't want to see the end of that movie again in Star Wars.
Right.
Well, those are good points all around. And we got nothing else to do but just sit back and let it happen. So for now, stay tuned for the Rebels episode coming up next in a week. And otherwise, we'll be back with more Star Wars news and maybe even some Willow Watch for you. See you next time.
State of the Empire is a production of the Consequence Podcast Network. Check out our expanding roster of music, film, and television podcast programming at consequenceofsound.net. This show is recorded and produced in Orlando, Florida at Nerdy Show Studios, home of the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. Discover more at nerdyshow.com. Special thanks to our Bothan pals in the Star Wars Spoilers Facebook group, the Nerdy Show Network Patreon backers, and Chief Mortimer Bast, the only Imperial smart enough to see the danger in the Rebels' attack pattern. Official canon says you're dead, but our hearts, our toys, and the holiday special confirm otherwise.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.